3 years in West Africa, down under 10 minutes. We have a little more time to talk. Coming from Santa Cruz, more or less, and talk about farmer adaptation and alternative practices. First, I wanted to kind of put it in the context of this session. Information delivery tools, the narrow understanding that I've seen of that is how do we better tell farmers to do what we think they should do? The goal being to adopt a certain seed or a new tractor or something that a researcher has kind of decided is the best option for the farmer. I don't know how true that is in the U.S. I've been in Africa for a while. But it comes from, I think, this kind of technology transfer paradigm where the researcher tests new practices, picks the best one, and extension then takes it to the farmer and says, use this, this will be good for you. Best practices, improved varieties, proven technologies, right fertilization management. And so it comes kind of from engineering. I'm sure we all have examples of this. I had a grant manager travel 3,500 miles and tell me not to call what I was doing a trial because we already knew what farmers should be doing instead. There was no question. It was already set. Just read the paper, tell it to them, give them a bulletin, and move on. And that might work in more stable and well-studied systems that are closer to an engineered system. What do you do when it's complex, when it's a dynamic system, when it's heterogeneous, or when it's just understudied? And an alternative is a more collaborative approach. There's been a lot of discussion about this, some sessions on farm research, participatory research, bringing farmers into the research design, bringing researchers into the farm instead of the research station. And with this, the idea of information delivery tools is more about how do we deliver information to farmers and help them to make better decisions. The goal being here, not adopt a specific practice, but adapt as they see fit. So that's the kind of philosophical framework. The rest of it will be focused on Senegal and the Gambia. This is an area with very low annual rainfall. It has a short rainy season. Rural households are heavily dependent on rain-fed crops, and there are major input constraints. It's a pretty marginal production system. It's also a very diverse one. There's a lot more heterogeneity, spatial heterogeneity, than I think is often considered, a lot more than I expected until I saw maps like these. So, for example, in the north, you get about 300 millimeters of rain in 78 days. In the south, it's closer to 900 in 100 days. There's also a high level of social heterogeneity. These are two farmers working in the same village. We worked with both of them. You can see they're under very different constraints and opportunities. So from the outside, it looks like two farmers in the same place. How different could it be? Very different. There's also a third farmer we worked with in this area I thought was quite innovative. I don't know how successful, but innovative. So despite this heterogeneity, the official management recommendations that reach the farmers are typically purchase certified seed of a new improved variety and purchase high levels of inorganic fertilizer, about 50 times the current average rate. And these, the research behind these recommendations, or the research in this region, is fairly nuanced. The recommendations that come out of it are fairly not. There tend to be blanket recommendations. They tend to be based on a limited number of highly controlled trials. Little mention of what are the costs and risks associated with the adoption of fertilizer, for example. And then little comparison with alternative practices. So it's either here's a recommendation, take it or leave it. There's very little information that actually gets to a farmer from that. So we wanted to say, well, are these best recommendations actually widely appropriate? How do they compare with other options? Are there better general recommendations that might be more appropriate? And then this idea of collaborative research as a way to kind of aid with information delivery and farmer learning. So can research be an extension tool? Can extension be a research tool? Can we get rid of that divide? Set up about 1,000 farmer trials. This is a rainfall map in the back just to give you a sense of the trial location. Two different designs, 2 years, 6 crops, and 7 regions. I'm going to focus on one of the designs which integrated seed and fertility management practices. So this is a kind of an overlapping strip plot is how I think of it. Looking at Farmer Standard versus the most recommended cultivar, three levels of inorganic fertilizer, and then low levels of organic amendments. Yeah, about a little over a ton an acre. And we started about 500 of these. The results are about half that. Anybody who's done on-farm trials understands why that is. So to go through real quickly some descriptive stats to give you a sense, this is the treatment effect on the kilograms per area. Yellow being, so this is relative to the gray box, the kind of current practice, no input, the yellow being the recommended practice. About 88 of the trials had a positive increase of the recommended, so it's definitely is an effective practice. It's not, doesn't stand out that much for the other practices that we compared it with. And the median percent change, again, this is just descriptive at the moment, it about doubled the yield across the crops and regions, but that's not actually that exciting. We had some results that got almost twice that. So the use of high inorganic and a new cultivar, add a small amount of manure, and it nearly doubles that effect again. If we look at, this is from a Bayesian general linear model, so trying to put some stats on those descriptive stats, the treatment effect again of the recommended practice, this is just soil fertility, doesn't include the varietal adoption. Using a high level of inorganic fertilizer and no organic gives you a positive effect, again nearly doubling, but it's not a standout effect. You can do better, you can get the same result with different practices. And then trying the extent to which, so it's a reliable increase in yield, it's not a reliable predicted yield. Farmers are often said, do this and you'll get X tons per acre, hectare there. That's not the case, is what we saw. You might get an increase, but there's so much underlying heterogeneity and so much variability in yield that increase doesn't mean you're going to have a standout 10 tons an acre or anything like that. Looking at the coefficients from the same model, this is trying to balance treatments versus everything else we collected, including the model, rainfall, soil type, or soil characteristics, population density, and everything else we could throw in there or measure. The treatments were broadly effective, some variability in them, but generally the positive result. The combination of the treatments had an additive effect, not an interactive effect, so I think that's clear. And most other variables were actually poor predictors. So it's not that soil conditions aren't relevant to production, it's that that relevance was outweighed by the treatment used. And we set this up to be a very visual design, so that as the farmers harvest it, they're learning from the trials themselves. I used to tell the farmers that they were learning before I was, and they would have the results before I would. This is just an example, another example. These are plots from the experimental trial. And again, this is an extreme example, but laid out in a visual sense where farmer says, I know what this got, I know what that got. I can see that the place that got the manure is a lot greener and a lot more productive. So the question then is, to what extent are farmers learning from this experience, and to what extent are they waiting for me to deliver the statistics to them? So we looked at their evaluation of different practices. This is after the trials, but before any sort of statistics and classic extension. So this is the value of collecting manure. Zero would be a no value, three would be a very high value, and then it was averaged among the farmers in each region. Manure was recognized as highly effective in the drier northern areas, was not considered something to use in the south. That changed with participation, and such that there was a high value to manure in all the regions after the fact. Inorganic fertilizer, moderately valued across the regions. And high value in the dry areas, less of value in the wet areas. There's a nice balance here. In the south, more manure is available. The soils are slightly better. In the north, there's not a lot of manure available. You got to make other options, make other decisions. And then another fun one was we studied crop residue, but at no time did we say, don't burn your fields to save the crop residue. We were collecting and applying. So this is kind of a question that says, well, how much are farmers then taking that information and applying it to a different question? Burning residue is fairly common very common in some regions. This one, there's not really enough residue to burn. And that dropped off dramatically in most regions with the participation. And again, this is not me telling them the results even. This is not me telling them don't burn. This is saying, here's the value of crop residue on your field. Do with it what you will. And there's a lot of interpretation going on. So just in conclusion, the current best practice recommendations are not really best in any sense. They aren't the most productive. They aren't the most efficient. They work sometimes. They don't work sometimes. And there are multiple other highly effective alternatives. And then farmers can and do make individualized interpretations. I didn't include in those numbers the spread, but you would see that some people are going to have a high value of manure. Some people know they don't. They're going to struggle to get it. They're not going to consider that a really practical option. And then kind of to step back, I think this identifies a problem of hubris on the part of researchers and development organizations who assume they know what's going on and can then tell farmers what to do. That has not been my experience. And then it identifies these collaborative research methods as being a way to work within a complex or understudied system and encourage farmer learning and farmer adaptation prior to understanding how that system works. Any questions? Yes.
I like what you did, and I think it's really interesting. One thing that I'm wondering about is the more of the economic analysis of, especially when you're going from gathering manure to paying for inorganic fertilizer. And I work with smallholders in Central America and Mexico, and one of the biggest drivers for them in the adoption of practices is not just the increase in yield, but the profitability or the cost benefit of the investment, and including labor. And so have you looked at that at all?
I spent 3 years trying to figure out how to look at that, and I couldn't really resolve a good way to do it other than just the farmer's perceived value. The reason being, some farmers are going to have enough cash to where you could say cost benefit in that sense, but it's really hard to put any numbers on the labor associated with collecting manure, for example. And I tried multiple times and wasn't satisfied. So I don't know if that's me not having enough experience with that or a system where there's just such a huge range. So a lot of the crops are used for subsistence as well. So it's again like trying to quantify labor and then quantifying the value to the family of a subsistence harvest. I ended up just not wanting to put numbers on it because I didn't feel they would reflect it. What's that?
You have time for more.
Okay, great. Yeah. I probably. I mean, if I went back, I'd love to. We got overextended, and just had to kind of prioritize. So yes, things could be done. I didn't feel like I could do them effectively on this scale, in this system. So you always got to always trade offs.
Cows in some instances. And one of the biggest challenges with crop residue management is very practically when they're pushing those implements, they just get clogged up. So a lot of the farmers are insisting on burning for that purpose. So I was just wondering if those farmers more like in the Cowlack region or Petit Luga, how they kind of responded to that.
Most of the ones I've talked to said that maize was really the one that was a problem just because you got the thick stover. The millet was often collected the significant pieces were collected and then used for building. So what was left was often fairly marginal, or not marginal, fairly minimal, and not so much of an issue. So I don't know, and even I've heard that in the last few years, there's been a lot less burning in that kind of ground-up basin area, whereas Gambia, it's still, that's what you do. There's no question. So it's always hard to say, is it too much of a struggle or is it just kind of a resistance? Because we had some farmers in the Chase region that were, you know, and I noticed the next year, I was like, well, how come you kept the residue and planted between it? And he said, well, it's this idea I had from the trials last year. So there's usually ways around it, especially if you have a horse or something. I think donkey a little bit harder. So I definitely heard that. I definitely heard from other people that's not such a problem. But I think it depends on the crop. Any other questions? All right.